Let the raucous sleigh bell jingle, hail our dear old friend Kris Kringle, driving his reindeer across the sky. Don't stand underneath when they fly by.
ELP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is Johannes Werner with your WSLR News headlines for Thursday, December 19th. In its summary of water monitoring over the past 12 months, Suncoast Waterkeeper pointed at two locations in the region as particular problem spots. Every week, the nonprofit samples water along the shores of Sarasota Bay at 11 sites and tests it for fecal bacteria. The trouble spots with consistently poor water quality identified by Suncoast Waterkeeper are Bridge Street Pier on Anna Maria Island and Palmasola Bay north of the causeway. Swimming at these locations was unsafe for most of the year. In contrast, sites with consistently good water quality included Longboat Key Bayfront Park, Longboat Key Town Boat Ramp on Bayside Drive, and Emerson Point Preserve. Saying the Constitution does not, quote, mandate comfortable prisons, Florida corrections officials want a federal judge to toss out a class action lawsuit. In the suit filed in October, three inmates allege the state has violated their rights because of hot conditions at a Miami-Dade County prison. They say the conditions at the prison violate the U.S. Constitution's Eighth Amendment ban on cruel and unusual punishment. The allegations focus in part on the effects of heat on older inmates with medical conditions. Dormitories at the prison do not have air conditioning. The named plaintiffs are a 66-year-old inmate who has hypertension, an enlarged prostate, and a burn scar over much of his body that impairs his ability to sweat, a 54-year-old inmate with hypertension and asthma, and a 65-year-old who has chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. They say they are at serious risk of harm due to the heat index and lack of ventilation and want the prison administration to install air conditioning. Homeowners insurance policies continue to flow from state-owned Citizens Property Insurance to private insurers. On Monday, the Florida Insurance Commissioner signed orders approving proposals by three private insurers to assume up to 160,000 policies from Citizens in March. Slide Insurance is the biggest beneficiary overall and of this batch. This time it was granted up to 100,000 policies. This has been Johannes Werner with your WSLR News for Thursday, December 19th.
Welcome to The Detail. I'm your host, Kathy Antunes, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. You thought mega hotels were over, right, on Siesta Key, that issue had been put to bed by my guest's efforts. Lourdes Ramirez is with me in the studio today. She is the founder of Siesta Key Community. She is the past president of the CONA, Sarasota's Council of Neighborhood Associations, where she and I serve together. She is also a past president of the Republican Women's Club. And I'm sure there's a whole bunch of other things that I'm not going to mention, but you've got quite a resume, Lourdes. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, thank you for having me on, especially on a topic.
Oh, I think so I'm not hearing you.
You're not hearing me.
Yeah.
How about now?
Okay.
Can you hear me now?
No. Let's try the other microphone.
This one?
Yeah. Let me see.
How about this one?
No, it doesn't. Whoops. Okay. Okay, wait a minute. Alrighty. We are in like uncharted waters here. Can you speak into it again?
Yes. Can you hear me now?
It's very low. It's coming through my mic only. Okay. Well, You know what, Lourdes? We're going to have to share a mic. Everybody, okay. If you can hang on, I'm going to ask my guest to just come around and sit and talk with me until the cavalry, Dave Peterson's coming in to help. Lourdes's mic is not working. We're going to be talking about mega hotels on Siesta Key. And recently, the Herald Tribune reported that there was a ruling by a judge, the same judge, actually, that ruled in favor of Lourdes's case to prevent a 170-room hotel. This was...
Can you hear me?
Found to be... Yeah, I hear you now.
Oh, now you can hear me?
Now you're good.
Okay.
So, 170-room hotel... Lourdes, you brought a lawsuit saying that the approval of that hotel was a violation of Sarasota County's comprehensive plan. And the same judge, because a 112-room hotel was not legally challenged, he recently ruled that that can go forward. That's my understanding. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah.
And just to bring everybody up to date on that, it's true. In 2021, when Sarasota County passed a law that says hotel had no density, or couldn't, the rooms didn't count as density, and I challenged it, we had two hotels approved at that meeting.
Yeah.
One on in the Village and one in Stickney Point. Mm-hmm. And then a year later, in 2022, they had the county commission approve this Wells Fargo site hotel. So in 2023, when we won the lawsuits, there was three ongoing lawsuits. One to sue on the fact that the county changed the code. And that's a state lawsuit. And then two of the hotels were sued, were in the lawsuit. But this third hotel, the one in Wells Fargo, was not challenged.
It's in Wells, I'm not sure, Wells Fargo?
Yeah, it's a site in the middle of Siesta Key, not too far from the beach. It's a now former Wells Fargo site.
Oh, so there was a bank there before?
There was a bank there before.
Okay. And just to back it up just a little bit, they were claiming hotel rooms don't really represent density because they're transient accommodations. You challenged that notion that they do represent actual density, and you won. But Siesta Key is... obviously, we just went through some really bad storms, and Siesta Key is recovering. But the traffic to get on and off the key during season has really become monumental. And in 1989, in the comprehensive plan, there was, pun intended, a line in the sand drawn over any increased density.
Correct. And it starts that the policy that starts to talk about not increasing density on any of the Barrier Islands begins with to reduce hurricane evacuation times and mitigate disasters. Mm-hmm. Do not increase density on the Barrier Islands. I mean, it starts with the whole reason why they don't want to increase density, and that's hurricane evacuations. You don't want to increase hurricane evacuation times, and you don't want more areas where you have to mitigate damage, you know?
So it's reducing death and destruction.
Exactly.
Human lives and property.
That's right.
So we're not going to overbuild in a place where we know, and we saw this past season, this is the first line of defense for the mainland, right? That's why they're called barrier islands.
Right.
But they're going to get hit. And you personally have dealt with, you know, the storm surge. You live on Siesta Key.
Yes. I unfortunately lost everything in my home.
Wow.
Hurricane Helene. And Milton, second storm surge came through. And I live a mile from the Gulf of Mexico, so it's
you're not right on top of the water.
No.
Yeah.
So there's a reason why these policies are in place. Mm-hmm. And I was grateful that the courts at the time recognized that the county had these policies and they shouldn't be approving hotels that had added hundreds of people to the Barrier Islands.
Mm-hmm.
But then... The state law is pretty clear. If a county approves a development, citizens who want to challenge that have 30 days to challenge it in court, each and every development. And when, you know, Dave, the developer Dave Ballot, decided to put forth his mega hotel, it was a year after we started the other two lawsuits, and we were already over $100,000 in legal fees. Plus, I didn't live close to the site, so I was concerned about standing. But I did approach some of the associations and areas near the site to take it on, and they thought, no, we don't want to take that on. And and unfortunately, because of that, the courts ruled that although everybody agrees, the developer agrees, the county agrees, the court agrees that this hotel violates the comprehensive plan, it does increase density, because it wasn't legally challenged, it's a legal technicality, it can go forward.
See, that to me seems ridiculous. It's not enough to have the law, that when you break the law, somebody has to say and spend money and go to court to uphold the law instead of the government upholding and enforcing the law. But that's kind of, well, by the approval itself, that's the kind of county commission we've had. They openly breaking their own laws with the comprehensive plan.
That's true. The county attorney at the time when they were reviewing the developer Ballot's hotel warned them. He says, we have two lawsuits in court. This is, you know, going to probably be challenged. You shouldn't really go forward with approving it.
Yeah.
But they did it anyway.
And which only feeds, you know, when you look at how these races are fueled by developer money. And I've said, you know, we have a bought local government in many ways. And what I mean by that is and it's a handful of developers. They have a lot of, I mean, there's a bunch of special interest money in these races, but they want a return on their investment. They want a yes. And people are starting to wake up to how bad it is. But for them to go forward when they knew that there was a sound legal basis for the challenges, and you ultimately prevailed. So you challenged a 170-room hotel in Siesta Key Village.
Yes, and on less than an acre.
On less than an acre. And what was the allowable density for a hotel? What is the permitted
Permitted density, according to the zoning code, is 26 units per acre. Although the courts believe it's 36 units based on some old documents, but nothing like 170 units.
Not 170. So 26, 36 tops.
Yes.
And then there was a 120-room hotel. Was that also on an acre or less?
It was a little over an acre, 1.2.
Okay. And that was, and the courts said, struck that down.
Correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But you've got this one that snuck through. The developer is David Ballot.
Yes.
And it's a 112-room hotel on the old Wells Fargo Bank site. Is that also in Siesta Key Village, or where is that?
No, that's just south of the public beach, not too far from the light there on Midnight Pass and Beach Road.
Okay, okay. But that one is, according to Judge Hunter Carroll, that one can go ahead because nobody challenged it.
And only for that reason. And Hunter Carroll also made it very clear that what he presented in August 2022 to the county commission is exactly what he's allowed to build. He cannot deviate from the binding concept plan.
Mr. Ballot, the developer.
That's right. The developer can't deviate from that. So there was two things that we were working on. One of them is making sure that he follows the court order to the T, because basically what Judge Carroll said is, we know it violates the comp plan, but since you got that approval, it's got to follow that exact approval that you put forth before the county commission. So if he changes anything major, I'm not saying paint color, but if he changes anything major, then we can challenge it and say he has to follow the comp plan. The second option was for the county to revoke that special exception. There is court cases down in Monroe County that the county...
Which is Key West and all the Keys down there.
Yeah, where they had a, you know, similar situation, and the county has the ability and the authority to say we issued that approval in error and that we can revoke the special exception. So the courts didn't like the fact that they just didn't move forward with the comp plan change. I mean, not comp plan change, I'm sorry, for, with the approval of the hotel. But the county does have the authority to revoke it. We tried to approach the county on it, but we didn't get the vote for them to revoke that special exception.
Which brings up the question, we have a new county commissioner.
Yes.
Right? Tom Knight. And, well, we have two new county commissioners. Tom Knight, who it's hope, you know, a lot of people believe Tom Knight is going to be more citizen friendly. And then you've got Teresa Mast, who is very tied to the development industry. She's on the board of a local developing lobbying association, and her husband leads that association. So my question is, changes, votes for development that alter or are outside of the comprehensive plan require a supermajority in Sarasota County.
Right.
4 out of 5.
Yes.
And it's possible, you know, with this special exception that was voted on and approved to give hotel the approval to this 112-room hotel, I would think that needed 4 out of 5. And if it didn't, supposedly, that could be litigated because it seems like a reasonable thing. Does Tom Knight's presence on the commission and the potential for this comp plan supermajority requirement, does that have any bearing on this 112-room hotel? Is it possible to get it turned around?
I don't think so, based on the judge's opinion, because of the fact that the way the judge looked at this particular case, he said, well, they didn't follow the state statute in which you had to challenge it. It's like a statute of limitations, right? You have only so much time to challenge something that was illegal. Doesn't mean that it's no longer illegal. It just means we didn't challenge it in time. So there is a proposal by Benderson to change the comprehensive plan to allow mega hotels, and he is on the same argument they used before, which was, hotels may have rooms, but they don't have density argument.
Okay.
That is going forward separately than this particular issue. This is more of a one-off, you know, with Dave Ballot's mega hotel. But what's being proposed, and we're waiting to see what's going to happen with that, is the comp plan change, where 3 other hotels are being proposed, if they can change the comprehensive plan to say only on Siesta Key you can have mega hotels because hotels don't have density.
And that would require 4 out of 5 votes.
Correct.
Okay. And between Mark Swift and Tom Knight, they may not have those 4 votes.
That's what we believe.
Okay. And tell me about that rule, that special exception, because at the time, you're going to have to refresh my memory here, it wasn't actually just about Siesta Key, was it? It was actually something that could be countywide in terms of mega hotels. Am I right about that?
Yes, the first time around in 2021 when they proposed to change the definition of density for hotels, that was countywide. Every commercial property that can have a hotel that has as many units as it wants without counting those rooms as density. Now they're proposing to narrow it just to Siesta Key. And leaving out the rest of the county when it comes to
leaving the standards in place for the rest of the county.
Exactly.
The limitations,
which is wild, right? You have a barrier island, and now we know we were always saying if it got hit by a hurricane, and now we suffered through that. They're thinking of adding hundreds of rooms. onto Siesta Key, and thinking that that's okay.
And Lourdes, you live on the Key. I mean, I'm sure now you've had to find another place to live, but it's your home. How are people doing there? I mean, we had Helene, which was so hard on the 28th of September. And then 2 weeks later, we had Milton. And you all, the Barrier Islands, really got slammed, you know, harder than anybody. How is it going now?
Well, I'm so glad you brought that up. You know, one of the reasons why they put these policies in place in 1989, that's how long it's been there, and safeguarding the Barrier Islands, is the county in our comprehensive plan and in court admitted that Siesta Key has the highest residential density in the entire county because it was built.
Wow.
A lot of the things that were platted on Siesta Key were platted from starting as soon as Sarasota County was formed in 1920. Oh, actually, prior to that, when Manatee County owned Sarasota County. Mm. You know, they were platting a lot of small fishing kind of places on Siesta Key. So we have more residential units per square mile than anywhere else in the county,
wow,
which is, again, we are a Barrier Island. So we have about 11,000 units on 2.3 square miles. And of the 11,000 units, about a third has substantial damage due to Hurricane Helene and Milton, you know. Mm. And it was heartbreaking, the week after Helene hit, and to see everyone's stuff out in the front yard. And there's a lot of work to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you drive down Siesta Key, you can see some, especially the foliage, is pretty much gone. A lot of our trees died. But we've been cleaning up, you know, our yards to make our outside of our homes reasonable. But the interiors of all these homes are gutted.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of work to be done.
Yeah.
And it's heartbreaking because I think the biggest concern I have is that Siesta Key, again, had all these old houses and cottages, and sometimes people lived in their family for generations, and now they're confronting with a huge bill, and some of them are thinking of just walking away, selling their lands, and so they're going to have someone come in there, maybe an investment company, and build something that's just not our style, you know, in Siesta.
Yeah.
Something very sterile, as I call it.
Well, and the thing is, I think climate change, global warming is real. This was the first year that I think the average temperature is 1.5 degrees higher, which is one of the lines in the benchmarks that at these climate conferences, you know, the world leaders were aiming to bring down emissions and carbon emissions so that wouldn't be breached, you know, that we would avoid an average temperature going up 1.5 degrees. Well, we're there. This is the year. And we saw what happened.
Yes.
The next benchmark is 2 degrees, you know, another 0.5 degree. Are there still climate deniers living on Siesta Key? I mean, no, I'm not. It's just a rhetorical question. But when you're actually being impacted by it, I think it's a different animal. And we have to build differently if we build at all in vulnerable places. We certainly, to my view, shouldn't be building at a higher level because, you know, all signs point to the last 20 years of storms. The next 20 years are not going to be the same as the last 20 years, right? I think that's a reasonable.
Absolutely true. I think what we're seeing, it seems abrupt, but I saw the signs years ago, you know, like seeing a little bit more water coming in, you know, in my garage, which is a little lower than my house.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't deny it. These back-to-back storms, you can't deny that our planet is in big trouble.
I look at just high tide because I fortunate to have a place that's in, it's, you know, we're on the mainland, so to speak, but we're on the water, and the bay, high tide is higher. It just is. Right. It's significantly higher to me, you know, when I look at it. I'm like, well, the line, water line wasn't that high on the dock when 20 years ago, when we moved in 21 years ago. So, yeah, it's, you know, you're plugged into local and state politics. Is there appetite for taking this seriously? It seems like a lot of the leaders out there are just shining it on.
I hope so, because in my conversations with the local leaders, they mm-hmm. seem to recognize, especially after we got hit with four storms, major storms in a year, because mm-hmm. of June 11th, the no name storm. And it's obvious that we can't, you know, just keep doing the same thing as we've done in the past. Mm-hmm. They may talk differently in the public, but I know privately they were on the quay days mm. after Helene hit. They saw the destruction. And I really hope it really hits home for them that this can't continue. We got to do things better. Yeah. And if they wanted to call themselves, you know, fiscal conservatives, then they also have to think of the financial impact, not only the human impact, you know, right. what's happening to us, you know, emotionally, physically, but also the financial impact. All of this is going to cause our government. You know, Siesta Key is 30% of the tourist tax. We do compete with the city of Sarasota, who's also about 30%. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We went down to 3% in October.
Wow.
Losing over $1 million. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that's because the county and all government agencies have to recognize that we have a major issue when it comes to our climate and our environment. Yeah. And then we're going to have to look at things differently. And adding more people onto our barrier island, when they closed the North Bridge leading out of the island, at a drop of a hat, it doesn't take much rain to close that bridge due to flooding mm-hmm. on Siesta Drive. You can't just start thinking, oh, we're going to just keep approving development from rubber stamping each one that comes before them.
On and on and on. So what are your thoughts about this new commission? I know you supported Tom Knight. What's the vibe with... that was, from what I've heard, and, you know, I've done my own calculations, but there's more money out there that went into the race from PACs. That was an expensive race. I heard Rainford, sources have told me that $1 million was spent to support Neil Rainford. And that Tom Knight spent about $600,000 for a county commission race.
For a county commission race. And I'm happy to say that people came out. You know, yes, Tom Knight took some money from development associated.
Culver House mainly.
Yeah, Culver House. But the people came out for Tom Knight and mm-hmm. donated to his campaign and showed that they really are concerned about how the developers have controlled our county commission. And so it was a really tough race. It was very nasty with all the negative mailers that went out.
Oh, yeah.
But, I it also goes to show that money is what it takes to get, and grassroots will have to start paying more attention.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for Tom Knight having such name recognition, he was our sheriff. He had the ability to fundraise. This, you know, single member districts was a pivotal factor, I think, in him being able to win, because it was those folks in Venice, right, who know him well. Right. Who's to say if it were a countywide race? But it didn't reduce the cost of the race at all. It's amazing, and I think it goes to show how valuable it is for developers to have a friendly county commissioner. Look at how much money they're willing to spend. And I could tell you from the return on investment for them, I think they'd be willing to spend double or triple, get what they want. You know,
yes.
to get who they want in there.
That's especially because they get millions of dollars of taxpayer subsidies for their developments.
Or just approvals.
Oh, just approvals.
Just
both.
Just getting both. An approval for a rural piece of property to become a high-density piece of property is huge, huge return on investment.
That's true. They get millions from that as well. But they also get millions of dollars of subsidies, right? They don't pay the full impact fees.
The infrastructure costs, yeah.
And the infrastructure. And in the case of Benderson, he even gets part of the tourist tax, not he himself, but, you know, the UTC mall.
Oh, it comes back to,
it comes back.
The rowing facility?
The rowing facility. Mm-hmm. How many millions are they getting from our taxpayers to pay for stuff that mm-hmm. I think you probably even more than Siesta Beach gets? So it's really well worth it for them, in their opinion, to invest that money in a race to get their county commission choice in mm-hmm. so they can get those approvals, so they can get subsidies. I mean, there's so much they can get out of it. They make tens of millions, I'm sure.
Yeah, so quick story because, you know, the rowing facility is something that everybody wanted. There was no controversy at all about making that borrow pit, which a borrow pit is where you get fill dirt, and it was used that area where the rowing facility is now, that lake, was what's called a borrow pit during the construction of I-75, and they needed a place to get soil. So we wound up with this big lake and filled it with water. It wasn't controversial at all to create a rowing facility. However, and being a resident of the city of Sarasota, going back a ways, maybe 20, 30 years, there was a lawsuit about dual taxation in the city of Sarasota because we pay taxes to the city and the county. And the gist of the lawsuit was that the county wasn't putting enough tax money back into the city of Sarasota. So the settlement required the county to maintain city parks. So this is my reading of the tea leaves, okay? That sunsetted like 2018, 2019, around there. And that was when Sanka, or the Benderson Rowing Facility, to my view, the spending simply shifted. The city became responsible for its parks again. We're still taxed twice. I'd say we probably are in the same situation now, not getting the return, not getting the reinvestment from the county that we used to. But those dollars are going to the rowing facility.
Right.
You know, like, it was pretty obvious one was being swapped out for the other, in my view. And it's not to say there shouldn't be any money going to the rowing facility. I think there should. But there was supposed to be a nonprofit. That was how they sold it all. Like, right. We're going to do this, and we're going to fund it. We're going to raise $22 million in private money, which meant state, actually, they were considering state grants their fundraising. I'm like, that's not private money. That's our money, too. So the working of the system is pretty, it's a pretty well-oiled machine.
Especially right. Since the UTC Mall is using our park, because it is our park and our rowing facility.
And it was always our land.
It's always our land.
It was never donated by them.
Never donated. It was always our land. And
which they've said.
Yeah.
It's been said, oh, they donated land.
No, they never have. It's always been our land. But they use it as their stormwater facility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they're using public land for private use. And then, you know.
Because they would be required to provide for stormwater. But this was, and hey, if that's a good fit, that's fine.
But they should be paying for that service, in my opinion.
Most of us do, right? Most of us do pay for that. Everybody, you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Programming at WSLR is supported by listeners like you and by Ringling College Galleries and Exhibitions. Ringling College's 2024-25 exhibition season features art from Ringling students, alumni, faculty, and nationally recognized artists from a wide range of mediums and from diverse backgrounds. More information is available at ringlingcollege.gallery. I got to give a shout out to the Sarasota Art Museum, the repurposed high school on 41, which Ringling College, took under its wing and developed into an art museum. And if you're looking for something to do this holiday season, what a beautiful museum to go to and check out. I always enjoy when I go there. So anyway, Lourdes Ramirez, you're in the house. We're talking about the mega hotel that snuck through, that fell through the cracks, right? That this 112-room hotel that nobody legally challenged, and a recent decision by Judge Hunter Carroll said, hey, you know, you got approval. It wasn't legally challenged, so it can go forward. So that's the context of the conversation. But things are changing in county politics. I'm curious about what we're hearing and seeing, that there's infighting within the Republican Party. I would say a lot of people see that developer money is a big factor in the control of the Republican Party, because there are so many registered Republicans. The same developers, if the Democrats outnumbered Republicans, they'd be trying to control the Democratic Party. But this is what we got. What is going on with you can run, but you can't run for, you know, Republican leadership? And it's kind of interesting to see there's yes, these conflicts.
Yeah, I've been active in the Republican Party for over a decade now. Mm-hmm. And it's come more obvious that the developers feel that if they're going to have their candidate chosen, they need the Republican Party to endorse that candidate, because a lot of people don't have the time to do the research on candidates. So they like to get that voter guide from the local Republican Party and see who the endorsed candidates are. And grassroots candidates never make that list. It's always developers. And you should see the tens of thousands of dollars that go into the party, the Republican Party. And, you know, it's a way of getting their chosen candidates to be on the top of the list.
And we're talking about, because, you know, Republicans for more than half a century there's only been Republicans on the county commission. So the real race is the primary.
Yes.
You know, we saw Teresa Mass, campaign manager's daughter, file as a write-in candidate for the purpose of closing, or the impact of that is it closes the primary. So her primary with Alex Coe, Democrats in District 1 could not vote. Independents, any other third party members could not vote in that primary. So we saw that before with Victoria Ann Brill, Jack Brill's daughter, filed as a write-in candidate when John Thaxton was challenging Kathy Dent in 2012 as supervisor of elections, closed the primary. There were so many Democrats who would have voted for Thaxton in that primary. It would have been an open primary because the only ones that were running were Republicans, and then it becomes an open primary. So they exploit this loophole with the write-in candidate. But tell me about with these races, and they want to control like Tom. Why was Tom Knight such a threat?
Well, because Tom Knight came out very publicly saying that when it comes to development, it's out of control. You know, and he wasn't afraid to talk about the fact that the development, and he mentioned Siesta Key several times, for example, because everyone recognizes how dangerous that is as well. Mm-hmm. And that was a threat to them. He was not a guaranteed yes, which is what the developers look for.
They want a rubber stamp.
They want a rubber stamp. And so he was a threat. So there's a group of Republicans called the Republican Assembly. That's an organization that's been around for over 10 years. Mm-hmm. And they decided when they put out their voter guide, they put Tom Knight as their endorsed candidate.
Choice.
And their choice, and Alex Coe.
Mm-hmm.
And recently, that upset the developers. And it upset the developers here because Tom Knight won. You know, in that particular case, it also developers got upset for the grassroots candidates who put out their voter guides in Manatee County. and all of their...
Shout out to them.
Oh, they did great job up there, yeah. The grassroots. And they got all of their county commission in who are not in the developers' pockets. So you see that the party, in order to strike back at those two counties.
Or the developer donors are striking back.
That's true. The developer donors were striking back through the party. They dismantled the Republican Executive Committee up in Manatee County because they were not happy that they
weren't marching to their drum, beat of their drum.
Their candidates didn't win, so someone had to pay, according to the developers. And down in Sarasota County, what they did is they... recently, we had elections for the leadership of the Republican Party of Sarasota County, and they expelled about 100 Republicans who were in the Republican Executive Committee, who were elected into the office by the public, and said that you couldn't come in.
So these were elected representatives.
Yes, because when you have a party. You have a Republican Executive Committee for every county who represents the party for the county. So they make the decisions and do the votes. And these are made of precinct captains, which is every precinct has a particular person representing them. And that's an elected position in election of presidential years. It's appointed off presidential years, but those positions are elected.
Precinct captains.
Now, you may not see it in your ballot. If there's one position open and one person applies for it, or four positions
then
open, then they're in. So you don't see it. But there have been some precincts in which if they had four openings, they had six people. So they had to you would actually see that on the ballot in the Republican primary.
Yeah.
So we are considered elected. And...
Are you a precinct captain?
I'm a precinct captain currently. Mm-hmm. And so unfortunately, in this recent vote, they expelled quite a few people who happened to be part of the Republican Assembly who had that second voter's guide that had Tom Knight on it.
So these are elected people.
Right.
And there's a donor contingent that had the wherewithal to flip those... to get rid of these folks? Like that, it's so interesting to me to hear this. I didn't know this.
See, it happened recently. There was every year we have, or every election, presidential election, we have a change in leadership or we have a vote for leadership. And the Republican Assembly, who were part of the Republican Executive Committee, had their choice of who they wanted to lead. They did not want the current leader, Jack Brill. And I think they were so threatened by that the party,
the
Republican Party of Florida, actually stepped in. The state party stepped in and said, sent letters to everyone who was part of the Republican Assembly and said, you're expelled or suspended from the party.
So they couldn't. It's like a little dictatorship. I mean, how can they just say to the folks who've been chosen, legitimately chosen, you're out?
It's very controversial. You know, there were lawyers getting involved, but by then it was too late.
But why is it too late? Like, these guys are just by fiat, by dictator type, this is how it's going to be, and everyone just says okay.
No. I think there's people who are going to fight it tooth and nail.
Wow.
Because it wasn't fair. They felt so threatened by this Republican group, conservative group, that to expel them a week before the election.
They did this before?
Just
in October. Right.
A week before.
October.
No, the election was 2 weeks ago.
I'm sorry. I'm mixing up. You're talking about the precinct captain elections.
The Republican Executive Committee election for leadership.
Okay.
And so I'm sorry. I don't mean to confuse
you. No, it's okay.
It's like having a club. You have the president of a club elected. Mm-hmm. So this group was excluded. So they couldn't vote for the leadership of the local party.
So who were the people that were turned out? Can you name some folks we might know?
Let's see. Terry Angley, who was our former state committee woman. was one. Mm-hmm. You know, she's a strong conservative, mm-hmm. and she was not allowed to speak or even attend. Stephen Gafanti, also, mm-hmm. who ran for hospital board. Mm-hmm. He and they had five police officers to make sure they didn't get into the building. It was not a pretty sight.
Okay, now I did hear something about Michelle Posey.
Oh, what Michelle Posey. That? Now, Michelle Posey ran for State House against James Buchanan and the...
And, you know, people who pay attention to the school board or the hospital board, she was like a frequent flyer at meetings. Every right to say whatever she typically, you know, there's some standards about what public input, but, you know... I know there's a lot of people that wouldn't be that upset that Michelle Posey wasn't allowed to, you know, I would find that kind of like, wow, okay. But what happened with her?
So she wanted to run against Jack Brill,
who was local party chair.
And she got the letter saying she's no longer part of the local Republican executive committee. I think there were about 100 people.
And it 100?
Was, I think so. I'm not 100% sure, only because...
So that whole assembly group got letters.
The whole assembly group. If they knew you were part of another Republican group, they excluded that group.
Well, I mean, welcome to, you know, there's a lot of us, myself included, very concerned about how the Republican Party is functioning these days. So to find out that they're doing this within their own ranks, it's like, well... You know, you can't think that these larger concerns that people in the country have about what's going on. Oh, I'm sorry. Did that happen to you? Gee, does that bother you? Wow.
Well,
How about that?
For a party who's into election integrity, that was quite a different way of handling the local elections.
Or, you know, the moniker election integrity for me has meant we're going to find all kinds of ways to put these hoops in front of people that they have to jump through when the hope that they can't jump through all of them or they're too busy or whatever, so that we kind of swing the electorate toward us, you know? I mean... That's how I've seen, and Joe Gruters, our state senator, worked on election integrity, I'm using air quotes, for the RNC. Many people, myself included, view it as voter suppression. That's my view.
And that's basically what I thought I saw with this recent...
Totally.
It's the voter suppression. And
they're doing it within their own...
Oh, it's amazing. They're probably hoping that it dies down before the 2026 elections.
And, you know, Lourdes, this is the thing that, you know, democracy is not... Democracy, if you're really going to embrace having a republic, if you're really going to embrace having a democracy, and I know there's a difference, there's very literal... People who are going to say it's a republic, it's not a democracy. I hear you. I'm using both terms, but most people understand democracy. It's not, you're not always going to get your way. There's going to be times when you lose, legitimately lose.
Yes.
Right? And you must be willing to be okay with that, to have a thriving republic. I mean, you can't insist on your way all the time. More importantly, you can't be willing to trash the checks and balances, to trash the system in order to get your way. And so I guess a lot of this, I look, well, that's kind of poetic justice. You all just got thrown out. How does it feel? Do you feel disenfranchised? Maybe you can look at how your fellow Americans feel in a different arena, but basically the same kind of thing happening. Maybe we can start there, right? Like, this is, but it's pretty amazing.
I know. If people knew what happens locally behind the scenes when it comes to politics, I really, really am disappointed. You know, when I became a Republican I look at the values of the Republican Party, and that's what I stick with. I don't, the party doesn't dictate what I believe in. It's the values that dictate what I believe in. And what I start to see in the past 10 years, starting when I first ran for office in 2014 to recent, they're not following values. They're following their donors, and the donors is dictating what, even if it's contrary to the values. You know, I mean, if you believe in small government, that means you don't want to expand it. Then why are we approving development left, right, and sideways, for example? And why are we following the rules the developers set down?
Why are we paying for it?
Why are we subsidizing development? And that's my value. So I butt heads with the party all the time, and I'll probably get that letter soon after this.
She's talking to her.
And I'm talking.
We're not supposed to be talking, Lourdes.
Not only that, I can't talk badly about the party. But the truth is, I have to look myself in the mirror.
Yeah.
And I got to look and say, you know what? What they're doing is not the Republican way. It's not the conservative way. It's not the American way.
Strong leadership is okay with being vetted, with being criticized, with, you know, being scrutinized. Strong, healthy leadership welcomes different points of view.
Right.
It's the weak leadership that demands loyalty, that has Linda Long, when she ran for state committee woman in 2012 in Sarasota County in the Republican Party, Linda Long won decisively. It was not close. But because she had forgotten, she wasn't any less loyal. She didn't sign 3 loyalty oaths. She only signed 2. And because she didn't sign the 3rd loyalty oath, then the second place candidate, which was Casey Pilon, she became the Republican State Committee woman for Sarasota County. That, for me, in 2012, when I saw that, I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
This is, and because it's a party election, right? And that was a technical rule. But, you know, they're right there. They disenfranchised their own voters, and that the local Republican Party did.
They did. Yeah. They did. And that's why it's going to be interesting going forward how they're going to try. I mean, they're making it sound like the recent election in the local party was an overwhelming, Republicans all supported them without the people realizing what actually happened, which is they did take out a lot of people. There was a coup. And it's a shame, you know, because with Jack, when he ran, if he could have lost, maybe he could have won legitimately, you know.
So this was all done to keep Jack Brill in place?
Yes. Yes, and you know, developers love Jack Brill. They do, because he does push for their candidates. And I've been frustrated.
So he was for Rainford instead of Knight?
Oh, yes.
Really?
Yeah, he was for Rainford. He was for Rainford. And, they painted it because Rainford was part of the executive committee board that, you know, he deserves, but everybody knows Rainford was just a puppet.
Tom Knight was sheriff.
I know.
It doesn't make any sense. You know, Lourdes, it's so fascinating to me to hear all this because, you know, the House divided against itself cannot stand, as Abraham Lincoln, who was a real Republican. He was a real Republican. He actually welcomed critics and criticism. And it's fascinating me to hear what's going on within the local party. And it's been reported in the news, hasn't it? I mean, has some of this been reported?
I'm not sure the recent thing. I know that they did report what happened in Manatee County when they took out the entire party because of the loss in the election.
Because their people didn't win. Kevin Van Ostenbridge, KBO, one of the... Easily the worst. The guy steals a constituent's bougainvillea. He's on video taking this bougainvillea. Mm-hmm. He's a county commissioner. Yeah. How in the world do you get upset about a guy that does that?
Yeah.
Losing. That's not the kind of behavior you'd expect. I'm sure he would say that that's not what he did. I don't. But the police were involved, and he had to. You know, it was on videotape. So, okay, Getting back to Siesta Key, this 112 room hotel with Mr. Ballot's development project, I guess the citizen involvement would be to hold it to the original approval, or the county commission can reverse the exception.
But I don't think we have the votes to reverse it. Okay. So it's going to be scrutinizing the project as it goes forward. Mm-hmm. And I think if we, this whole conversation we had, whether it's politics or stuff, comes down to one thing. Siesta Key came out big for Tom Knight. And we had fundraisers. He raised.
You worked for him.
We really worked hard. We volunteered, even though he was not technically our county commissioner.
He's not your district commissioner.
He's not my district. Right. But Siesta Key came out very strongly. And he had two fundraisers, of which one, he raised $20,000 easily. Mm-hmm. And so we've going to work forward. We got to involve politics. Mm-hmm. But I think that the people have to recognize that the party is, you know, they're very much influenced by the developers. But so Siesta Key is going to work as we have for Tom Knight for the next two candidates, because the next two election in 2026 are both for District 2, mm-hmm. north part of Siesta Key and the city of Sarasota, and District 4, mm-hmm. which is the southern part of Siesta Key. And we feel that that's going to be the effective way to get our choice in.
And for voters to know, they have to really be wary of these voter guides and the provenance,
yes.
where they're coming from, who's behind them. You know, I mean, we beat this drum all the time here on my show. Know who your local candidates are. It really does matter.
It does matter. And so in order to protect Siesta Key, in order to make sure that these developments come so frequently in various ways, to stop this hurting Siesta Key, as you said in the beginning, this is about life. This is about human life, the protection of human life. And we need to protect our comprehensive plan. We need to protect the rules. We need to have commissioners who understand that. And so we need to get involved and make sure we know who our county commissioners are and hold them accountable.
Yeah. So on that note, Lourdes, tell us where we can read about what you're doing and support your work. You have a website, right?
Yes, I do. I started a new nonprofit working with the other litigants of the lawsuit against Sarasota County. It's mm-hmm. called Protect Siesta Key. My website is protectsiestakey.org. We have a petition on there. We even have a page on hurricane resources to help people out. Mm. And as we go forward, the more we hear about what's happening in Sarasota County, and the more we know about this upcoming comp plan change to allow more hotels, we need people to support Protect Siesta Key.
All right. Lourdes, thank you so much for the work you're doing.
Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. Everybody, you have been listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Be sure to stay tuned for more public affairs programming here on WSLR. Make it a great day.
Oh, I'm a jewel. Just stop by to get a cup of coffee now. Just stop by to grab a cup of coffee. Don't give me no whiskey. Ain't got time for wine. I got to wheel this old semi down the line. Well, I just dropped a load of grain off about 40 miles up the road and go back empty. This old trailer's sure can bounce when it's empty too. About to shake my kidneys loose. I seen the light coming in my windshield. Just black, thank you. It's kind of hot. You got something to cool it off? In the coffee. Pour it in the coffee. that's better. Yeah, it's good. You make this stuff yourself, you ought to bottle it. Well, that old truck wore out about a year ago. I got a brand new Kenworth out there. Look out the window. Got them West Coast aluminum bud front wheels, twin screw, twin stacks. Got a Cummins 335 with a 4x4. Got an air-conditioned sleeper. Get my marker lights rigged up like a Christmas tree. Keep all them drivers away.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! You're listening to WSLR-LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV-LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. From New York, this is Democracy Now! Human Rights Watch is accusing Israel of committing acts of extermination and genocide by intentionally depriving Palestinians in Gaza of water. We'll speak with the group's Israel-Palestine Associate Director. Then to Syria, where mass graves are being uncovered following the toppling of the Assad regime.
We established that these summary executions took place in the Tadalmon area of Damascus on April 16, 2013. Since the fall of the Assad government, we have been able to travel to Damascus to see the area for ourselves.
And in California, the federal government will pay a record $116 million to more than 100 women who were sexually abused in a federal prison in Dublin, California.
The reason we're seeing historic, unprecedented lawsuits winning against the federal prison system is because the issue of staff sexual abuse is rampant across not just the federal prison system, but every type of carceral facility across the country. And when survivors speak up and link up with advocates on the outside, we're seeing that historic wins are possible.
We'll speak-